You're listening to Lost and Found. I'm Jonathan Green.
People in Western Sydney, Western Sydney, Western Sydney,
Sydney's Western suburbs,
Sydney's West,
on the streets of Western Sydney.
You might have guessed where we are today. We are in Western Sydney, a place we've heard a lot about of late. But here's a thought. Outside of the great Australian imaginary, does Western Sydney actually exist? We know it's the vast urban expanse that cradles the Harbour City. It's Sydney's engine room, Australia's third largest economy, and a hyper-diverse area, all nestled on Darug and Darrawal country. But this region is often misunderstood, caught behind stereotypes of class, suburbia, migration, all of which have combined to create an imagined Western Sydney. So today, we're going on a journey of the mind to find out what Western Sydney, or Western Sydneys, might lie beyond the headlines.
Hi, I'm Sheila Ngotfarm. I'm a writer and radio producer, and I live in southwestern Sydney. I haven't travelled more than 5 kilometres from my home in about 3.5 months, so I've gotten to know my local neighbourhood extremely well. I live in the Bankstown area, and I worked out that all up, you know, over the years, I've probably spent about 3 decades around the Bankstown and Lakemba areas, which are part of southwest Sydney.
When people talk about Western Sydney as a sort of an amorphous entity, does that make any sense? What do you think when you hear that expression?
Yeah, I've always thought it was quite a lazy way of describing what is essentially most of Sydney, because Western Sydney is most of Sydney. It's a psychogeographic designation, because when we talk about the area, it's a really vast region. It extends south to Campbelltown, you know, west past Penrith, and even now into the northwestern areas, which are more recently settled. And so even where I live, which is, you know, what we call southwestern Sydney, it's really even closer to the inner city. And even like a few decades ago, what we now call the inner west of Sydney, that used to be called the western suburbs. So it's quite an amorphous designation, really. It seems to be changing, and the meaning of it changes as well.
You've mentioned the expression psychogeography. What's the psycho part of that? Where is this in the mind and the thinking?
People, so when they say Western Sydney, it is kind of an othering that happens as well, because when you actually look at the map of Sydney, the line of what constitutes where Western Sydney begins is very unclear, and that seems to shift as well. Growing up in the area, I don't think I understood that I came from a place which is called Western Sydney, but I remember the first time I was confronted with it was I went to university, the University of Sydney, and so that was in the city, Essendon University, the oldest university we have. And I met a guy from another part of Sydney, and he said to me, "You don't sound like a Westie." and I thought, well, what does that mean exactly? I didn't think that he was anything too special either, just because he was from another wealthier part of Sydney. So it's a class issue, for one thing. I think when people now talk about Western Sydney and they're from outside the area, I suppose they're essentially like putting the area down. But often it's really just due to ignorance. I don't think people really understand what they're talking about when they say Western Sydney.
West side, west side. Yeah. Yeah, 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 yo. 40 years.
Yeah, we cruising on the west side, west side. The 48 black town, west side.
I'm Shanti Robertson. I'm an associate professor at Western Sydney University. I work across the Institute for Culture and Society and the School of Humanities and Communication Arts. I'm a sociologist and I specialise in migration studies, urban studies and young people. And I absolutely love working and researching in the Western Sydney region because there's so much going on there.
Let's put a few facts around it. Can you describe for us broadly the demographics of the Western Sydney region?
Well, if we compare it to the rest of Sydney and indeed to the rest of Australia, it's absolutely one of the most ethnically and culturally diverse regions, not just in Australia, but probably also in the world. But that diversity is a little bit unevenly dispersed throughout the region. So you've got suburbs, for example, like Liverpool or Fairfield, which are incredibly diverse, a real diversity of ancestry, religion, language background, different histories and streams of migration. Then you have other parts of the region like Penrith, for example, where the top ancestry groups are Australia, Britain, Scotland and Ireland. So you do have pockets of the region which are a bit more culturally homogenous than others. On the whole, it's quite a young region. So demographically, there's a lot more young people in the West, which is often why it's seen as this sort of vibrant growth area. Lots of families, young families in particular, and it remains very much a working class region. So there's a much higher proportion of residents in Western Sydney working in trade, services and manufacturing. So one thing we've really seen this year is the extent to which Western Sydney really does house so many of the essential workers that do the critical work, both in Sydney and in the state.
In terms of those migrant populations, where does Western Sydney stand in terms of the generation since arrival of those family groups?
That's a really interesting thing about Western Sydney, because you really do see patterns of this entire history of Australian migration in microcosm. So if you think about a major urban centre in the region like Parramatta, you've still got the migrants that arrived post-war who are now in their second and third generation, Italian, Serbian, Lebanese. You've got the 1990s flows of refugees from places like Vietnam, who have also now been in Australia for a couple of generations. And then you've got patterns of more temporary and skilled workers and international students.
And for such a place of strong migration, I mean, COVID has drawn a line through that for the moment. It's placed everything on pause.
Yeah, it absolutely has. And I think the border closures have been particularly difficult for Western Sydney families, because so many of the residents of Western Sydney are still really closely connected to their transnational links. You know, they have immediate family members overseas, and some of the places where their families are have been places that have been really hard hit by COVID. So there's been a lot of collective grief, I think, and a lot of collective trauma in the region, not just to do with what's happening locally with local restrictions and local anxieties around the pandemic here, but also around what that's really doing to family relationships across borders and people's fears for their families overseas as well. So you really do see all different kinds of migration heritages and experiences in Western Sydney, which is one of the things which mean that I would really describe it as a super diverse area. So it's not just an area where there's concentrations of particular ethnic groups. There's really diversity within diversity across generations and also across cultures in the region.
This diversity within diversity also informs one of the biggest forces shaping Western Sydney, religion. The region's typically more religious than the rest of Sydney, with the majority of residents adhering to some form of Christianity, alongside large Islamic, Hindu and Buddhist populations. And while Christianity on the whole is in decline, Western Sydney boasts one denomination that is bucking the trend.
My name is Christina Rocha, and I'm a professor of anthropology at Western Sydney University. And I lead a research cluster there called Religion and Society. So I'm interested in how religious ideas, practices, objects, and people move around the world and what makes them move. Since the 80s, there has been, you know, a slow decline in Anglicanism and a move of, we're talking here of Australians, especially in Western Sydney, from Anglicanism to other forms of Christianity, and one of them is Pentecostalism. Even though Christianity as a whole is declining, we have an incredible increase in Pentecostalism, but that's from a tiny base. So in Great Western Sydney, we have 1.4% of the population is Pentecostal, and in Western Sydney would be 1.6. So it's not a big base, but it has increased 18% in the period from 2006 and 16. And it's obviously, we think, yeah, as scholars, that it is still increasing. We see more qualitative data, you know, and people talking more about it, you know, more churches and more migration. So I think that it's increasing very much. What is interesting about megachurches is that they are total social institutions, as we say. So they incorporate the whole family. So we see a lot of young families there and a lot of young people. And because they have activities all week, so they're not Sunday churches. They have activities for young men, for young women, for wives, for men, for older people, for couples. There's always something happening. So in suburbia, there's very little entertainment for kids. They go to the shopping mall or whatever. So the churches are really safe place for kids because they are very big. They have a big area and they have all these activities happening. So the parents are very happy that they're not, you know, loose on the streets or, you know, causing trouble. So they are in a safe place, supervised. Even if they are, you know, like in the car park, going skateboarding or something, they're still inside the church, you know, in the compound.
Well, a lot can happen in a suburban car park, even those next to churches. Now, for some, the overlooked spaces of the suburbs can take on a safety of a different kind, places vital for self-discovery.
Space, especially once I got a driver's license and access to a car, queer space really became in between space. My name's Paul Clater. I'm a research affiliate in the Department of Gender and Cultural Studies and a writer and researcher on queer suburban art practices in Sydney. I kind of grew up on the extreme outskirts of the Sydney metropolitan area and in between two different kinds of Western Sydney, I guess. So living quite close to Camden and Campbelltown and a kind of white version of Southwest Sydney, and then equally close to Fairfield and Liverpool and the heart of kind of multicultural Western Sydney. And for me, growing up as an Assyrian kid with an Assyrian and Armenian background, living in that place, I kind of was navigating both places, both of those Western cities. For me, the queer spaces were driving around with friends, going to shopping centers, hanging out, talking about gay TV or gay movies or books or whatever it was, and kind of talking about these things with friends and having the city as a reference point and something which we would engage in and in some cases aspire to. But unfolding our queerness within these spaces, which you would never kind of expect to see within kind of suburban shopping centers and side streets where we'd park and have conversations for hours and things like that. So by expanding out what we expect of suburbs, we're able to kind of complicate this idea of the suburbs as homogeneously straight, but also create room for queerness in the places it exists, including the hostile places, right? Because in a lot of situations in the suburbs, queerness is policed and excluded, and that it exists there, but it also exists in the way young queer people resist those dominant narratives and exclusions and push back against that hostility. And it exists in the way that queer people build our own suburban cultures, connecting to friends, finding lovers, finding different communities. And that happens both inside and outside suburban space. So it's a much more complicated picture than this unidirectional focus on the city as the only queer space that I think means we miss a lot. So for me, the Western Sydney, the kind of idea of Western Sydney really changed and shifted with the different demands made by things like ethnicity, things like gender, things like sexuality. And it wasn't until, I guess, I was growing up and I became a teenager and I was dealing with being a gay Middle Eastern kid in a predominantly white school and then spending a lot of weekends with family in Fairfield, that I kind of got a sense of the way that different places were marked. And then this changed again, I guess, as I became older and when I was a teen and then after some big events like the Cronulla riots in 2005. Mm. And that kind of really shifted my way of understanding my place in Sydney and my place in this broader expanse called Western Sydney. It shifts again when I went to university. And for me, that meant a long commute, 2 hours into the city.
Mm.
And that made the difference between Western Sydney really clear.
Well, the New South Wales pandemic looks increasingly like a tale of two Sydneys. In the 12 local government areas of concern in Western and Southwestern Sydney, people spent the weekend under the state's toughest lockdown, complete with a 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew. But in the affluent eastern suburbs, photos emerged again, showing unmasked people flocking to beaches and parks.
The tale of two Sydneys is a familiar one. This, of course, is nothing new to Western Sydney, which has borne the brunt of historical underinvestment alongside rapid population growth. But times, they are a-changing. Parramatta's quick becoming Sydney's second CBD, while a third CBD is planned around the Western Sydney Airport. Suffice to say, there's a lot of investment floating about, and Western Sydney needs a lot of it, especially if it's to remain habitable.
I mean, if you Google Western Sydney, you'll see these kind of bird's eye views of landscapes, often redlined to demonstrate coming urban heat. And research is telling us that we're looking at 50 degree summer days by mid-century, but also river flooding will be an issue. So it's a bit of a canary in the coal mine for climate change impacts. I'm Abby Melick-Lopez and I'm an Associate Professor in Design Studies at UTS in Sydney, but I did spend 16 years as an academic at Western Sydney University and also an Institute for Culture and Society there, and all of our research was kind of focused on Western Sydney. So I feel like I haven't left. I'm still very much involved in applied research in Western Sydney.
If we look at Western Sydney as against Eastern and Northern and Southern Sydney, are we looking at a sort of a map of spatial inequity?
There are inequities. In the post-war period, planning and development did leave out some really key critical infrastructures like transport, hospitals. The first university in Western Sydney didn't arrive until 1989. So there were critical infrastructures that have been left out. And that certainly played a part in the way that people live in the city now. So it's not that people are inherently disadvantaged or vulnerable. Mm. It's design conditions that create vulnerability.
And it's a part of the city which has grown quickly and has grown intensively. What has that meant about, you know, things like open space, about green space?
I mean, I guess the imagination of Western Sydney has always been it's a landscape to be invented. So there's this sense that it is the place of the future Sydney.
Planners say in the future, Sydney will become a metropolis made up of three distinct cities. The existing CBD in the east, a central city at Parramatta, and a city the size of Adelaide around Sydney's second airport in the west.
New data predicts that Blacktown, Parramatta, Liverpool and the Hills are all areas that will see the highest number of houses built in the next 5 years.
There's no doubt that Western Sydney is the great city. It's the mega city of tomorrow.
So Western Parkland City, which at the moment is a construction site, by 2036 we have a city that is envisioned to be built from the ground up. So we will have transport infrastructure, residential precincts of, you know, the new circular economy, you know, a new metro line, obviously the Aerotropolis, a new airport. So all of this is being imagined now, and it's highly ambitious. It's a vision of high density buildings rising up from the horizon with green infrastructures. And we've been working with Sydney Water and New South Wales Circular to think about imagining how this city might become a bit of an oasis, so that it will think about how to restore lands that have been damaged by development, how the ecological management and care of the place can be sustained, how cooling services and amenities for the city can be more inclusive, so that, you know, young people from surrounding social housing developments and so on can come and use these features. So it is going to be highly dependent on water, obviously, and so access to water services and circular water, so that that water becomes accessible in the environment, will be really a critical part of the picture. And I think, you know, there will be challenges. The intensity, duration and frequency of storm events and heat waves and so on will need to be managed. And that's going to require something like Paris's public water system. They have a kind of an observatory that monitors local environmental conditions and informs residents of the region about what's coming. And so there's a kind of supportive infrastructure or a network of support that will allow people to access help if they need it and retreat to cool refuges or evacuation centres as required. So the image of this new city, which is a knowledge city, you know, so all of the new residents coming in will be part of the new knowledge economy and working in areas of new technology and innovation, which is, again, quite a big distinction from the existing communities of Western Sydney. So how that becomes a more inclusive picture is something that we really need, I think, to be focusing on. So the vision of the new city as an inclusive city would mean providing more accessibility to those rich resources, because a really well-resourced, dense, wealthy city is something entirely new for Western Sydney. And so those tensions, you know, between existing community and this new community will need to be planned in advance, so that it is a more inclusive city, particularly, yeah, when the temperatures reach 50 degrees and when there are kind of other environmental conditions that people need to survive.
I think a lot of people living here have great lives. They don't necessarily think that they're disadvantaged or missing out on anything. They live quite rich and full lives, you know, full of family and connection and, you know, a sense of place and belonging, I would hope. But then the conversation that we're talking about, I think, occurs kind of in the public discourse. So that's driven by, like, the media. It's driven by the cultural sphere. It's driven by people who don't really live here and don't really understand some of the kind of nuances and complexities, you know, living here. Them, they, Western Sydney is just like a tick box. I mean, it literally is a tick box on government forms. So then I think because of that, they think, oh, well, this writer's from Western Sydney, they must represent all of Western Sydney. But that's not true at all. There's millions of people who live here. We all have vastly different experiences of life and perspectives as well. So I think, yeah, on one level, I kind of feel like someone like me sort of occupies both of those worlds. Like, yes, I mean, most of the time I'm just now these days a suburban mom with two kids, taking my kids to, you know, local lessons and that. But I also, because I have a foot in the other world, I also understand what the perception is of this area and why it is important to potentially change that as well.
Sydney, what's up? Doing, lad? How you feeling? I need a real sweet one that'll ride when I mean it. It's not just any that I'm feeling.
You've been listening to Lost and Found, this time in Western Sydney. You heard from Sheila Njop-Pham, Shanti Robertson, Christina Rocha, Paul Kalaya and Abby Melick-Lopez, as well as clips from the ABC archives. For more Lost and Found local travel, check out episodes on the Torres Strait, Broken Hill, Blake Burley Griffin, Queer Melbourne, and our series of modernist guides to Australian capitals. They're all on the ABC Listen app.
gotta stay cautious. All up in my grill, now you're all up in my porch.
Producers are Lisa DeVissi and Alan Whedon. Technical production by Tim Simons. I'm Jonathan Green.
Hey, Zinni, tell him something about a 22 mine. Hey, sniper, is this you and Messiah?